When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some, I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out, 5-hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
All right. We are about 49 hours away from kickoff in Landover. The weather, 29, 30 degrees, sunny, some wind. Not as windy as it will be tomorrow when this real cold air gets ushered into our area for the next few days heading into the holidays. Sunday will be the coldest day, but at least no precipitation, but for, you know, not even close, will be the coldest game of the year and the coldest game that Jaden Daniels has ever played in. All right, my keys to a win over Philadelphia. The Skins beat the Eagles if. Number one, I've talked about this week, but you have to offensively be ahead of the sticks. Good down and distance offensively. Philly is the number two third down defense in the league, in part because they are very good defensively on first and second downs. They are also just very good on defense overall. You know, we had our guest from the PhiladelphiaEagles.com, the insider Dave Sperato, yesterday. And the way he was describing the defense is exactly what we've seen as fans from, you know, outside of Philly watching them. They are fast, they are physical, and every player is high motor and just relentless chasers of the football. Like, they really are good defensively. That's the strength of that team. AJ Brown and Devontae Smith and Saquon Barkley and Jalen Hurts, they're all good players. Philadelphia is at times explosive, and at times they're pedestrian offensively. Defensively, they're the best in the league right now with the way they're playing. They've got the best players, they've got the best defensive coordinator, and they play with incredible energy and high motor. If you are in second and third and long, you're done. You got no shot. How do they stay in good down and distance? Quick game, please, lots of it. Effective runs with the quarterback included. You know what they did against Tennessee, right, when they had 12 third and threes or shorter. And they did that because they were able to run the football. They were able to run the football with all 11, the quarterback involved. They were able to, you know, get quick game going, get the ball out to some of their playmakers. I know they're missing some from the last time they played Philadelphia. I personally would like to see less pullers, you know, less guard tackle, guard center pulling. I think Jalen Carter and Jordan Davis and Zach Bond are just too disruptive. And we already saw last week that some of those plays got blown up. There were a lot of TFLs last week. The Ravens with Lamar and Henry were able to run the football, you know, 3 weeks ago, whatever it was, a month ago, against the Eagles. And so that's kind of the last example of a true dual threat, you know, against Philadelphia since Washington played Philadelphia the last game. This is number one on my list. You've got to keep ahead of the chains because that gives you the best chance of possessing the football. If you're in second and 12, if you're in third and 8, third and 9, third and 10, I think this is going to be a long day. Now, I say that, and there's always, with this quarterback, the caveat that he can bail you out of a lot. You know, you could be in third and 12, and he can figure out a way to extend a play and make a throw, or extend the play and make a run. And we saw that several times last week. So there's always that possibility. But, man, the Tennessee game is kind of the blueprint for game management offensively. Staying ahead of the chains so that you can convert on third down and keep the football. That leads to scoring opportunities when you get to the red zone, if you can do that. And that's where Washington has to excel. They've got to be plus in the red zone. When we look at the box score, you know, after the game, Washington's got to be 2 for 3 and Philadelphia's got to be 1 for 3. Or Washington's got to be 3 for 4 and Philadelphia's got to be 2 for 4. That you've got to score touchdowns when you get there. Philadelphia is an excellent red zone defensive team. Washington is a bad red zone defensive team. So that plus minus in red zone comparison, I think, will be huge in the game on Sunday. Number three, this is the cliche, don't beat yourself, but turnovers are going to matter in a big way on Sunday. I think Washington's got to be plus one or better to beat this iteration of the Philadelphia Eagles. The Eagles are better than they were when they faced Washington on Thursday Night Football. They just are. They're better defensively. They're a better football team. Washington didn't necessarily lose that game because they were minus one in the turnover category. Remember, that turnover came when they were already down by 2 scores in the fourth quarter. But they were 3 for 12 on third down in that game. They were 1 for 2 on fourth down, and Philadelphia had a 7-minute time of possession advantage and a 9-play advantage overall. Washington has to be on the plus side of possessions so that that, you know, evens out. You don't want Philadelphia with 8-9 more plays in the game. Third downs, you know, that's the down and distance thing, and then converting on third downs to stay on the field, and that means gaining a possession or two with a plus in the turnover margin category. I think they've got to be plus one or better to win Sunday. It might be plus two or better. Next up, defensively. You know, they did a pretty good job on Philadelphia in the first half. It wasn't the worst game. In fact, you know, looking back at kind of my notes from the Philadelphia game, one of the things that I liked is I thought that their first half defense was pretty good. You know, the Eagles really self-destructed in that game with 2 missed field goals, a couple of penalties, a couple of dropped balls. Remember, they had that badly timed flea flicker when they were actually moving the football. The defense stood up pretty well in that game. Frankie Louvu was big. He was the one that disrupted and totally messed up the flea flicker opportunity. They held Barkley in that first half to 3.7 yards per carry. You know, Philly's offense overall in the first half managed just over 4 yards per play. Now, how did they do it? They loaded the box. You know, they loaded the box in that game, and they took risks on the back end without Marshawn Lattimore. But in that first half, when they did that, the coverage didn't suffer as much as maybe you would have expected it to. I thought, you know, in that moment, it was a sign that the defense had improved. Of course, things got ugly in the second half in particular. You know, I know that people go back to that game and they say, you know, it was really a tremendous defensive effort, but what happened was they just got tired late and it broke down. Well, Philadelphia scored on every single drive they had the ball in the second half, like the Saints did last week. You know, the only reason people said about that game is that yeah, they were great through three quarters, is that Philadelphia had two super long drives that took the game into the fourth quarter. Yeah, they scored 20 points in the fourth quarter, but that's because they scored three, and then their second drive started in the third quarter and ended in the fourth quarter with a touchdown. They did not get off the field once defensively in the second half, but in the first half, they were much better. They've got to, with Lattimore, I think, load the box again. Or the flip side, the alternative would be to play some bend, don't break, and try to hold up in the red zone. Remember, Jake Elliott missed two field goals in the first half of that game. He missed one on their opening drive, and he missed one midway through the second quarter. That was huge as to why Washington had a halftime lead and was able to take a 10-6 lead into the fourth quarter. But somehow, they've got to, you know, pick whichever poison you're going to pick. You know, are we going to load the box and say, Jalen, throw to A.J. Brown against Lattimore, against San Ristil, however they play it coverage-wise, throw to Devontae Smith, you know, throw to Goddard, throw to Gainwell out of the backfield, throw to Barkley, throw to Jahan Dotson. If you're wondering what Jahan Dotson has done since, by the way, the first catch of the game, remember, against Washington for 8 yards, he's caught a total in their last four games of 5 balls for 16 yards. He's not a big factor for them at all. But defensively, if you load the box, it's got to pay off for you by stopping the run. If you don't load the box, you can't give up the big play. And then you've got to really hold up in the red zone. I don't have a lot of confidence in the defense, but I also recognize that Philadelphia can be inconsistent offensively. And they're not super dynamic. They're not super complex. Kellen Moore's offenses aren't. And then, you know, two more things in how they beat the Eagles. Number one is you've got to recognize that Philadelphia is a four-down offensive team. So you've got to be successful in creating third and more than twos, right? You know, you can't leave them on the field near, you know, plus territory. And that can be, you know, at their own 40 in third and two or shorter, because they're going to stay on the field and they're going to tush push their way to a first down. So you got to, you know, you got to get stops on first and second, and then, you know, have a third down that, you know, doesn't end up in fourth and one. You know, that's big too. When you do put Philadelphia into third and longs, they'll check it down and try to get close enough to go for it on fourth down. They're not always looking to pick it up. You know, they're not always looking on third and six to pick up all six, or third and nine to pick up all nine. They're looking to just get within range of being able to go for it on fourth down. And then lastly, man, we got to have a kicker that can make kicks. Red zone percentage is big in this game, but when you get in scoring position against this Philadelphia team, you can't miss. These are losses of possessions, essentially, because some of the misses come from long enough range where you give them field position to start. Whether it's Gonzalez or Greg Joseph, enough of the missed field goals already. You got to pay the. Some of these drives have ended disappointingly, but not because of the offense. Their kicker, Jake Elliott's had a rough year for him. And so, I mean, we know from that first game. So being, you know, perfect on your own field goals and having them miss one, just like in that, you know, area of red zone plus minus, that'll be huge. I think they have a chance. I really want Zach Ertz for this game. I think he's really important. I know there's no chance of Eckler, clearly. He would be the most important of the missing pieces. He would give you a chance that, you know, that you had in some of the drives you had in that first game. But without Ertz, that's a big concern. I mean, Sinnott, Bates, you need more than just Terry and Brian Robinson Jr. and Jaden. You need somebody else. But I do think they have a chance. We'll have predictions at the end of this hour. Denton, what are your keys to a win over Philadelphia?
Well, I mean, well, first and foremost, you know, containing Saquon Barkley, it was just announced Dan Quinn spoke. He was speaking as you started giving your keys. John Allen, despite practicing in a regular jersey not going to play. So yeah, that is a little bit of a miss, but also the expectation wasn't that he was going to be good to go. I actually think they did a really good job in that first matchup of handling Saquon Barkley until those final big runs at the end of the game. So whatever they did in that capacity worked. Offensively, the key is run the football, but you got to execute. It was Jaden's worst game of his NFL career. I think the caveat is it was on 4 days worth of preparation, so you can kind of give a little bit of an out maybe in that regard, but there's no out this time. You've had 7 days. You've seen this team before. They got to go out there and execute. Hopefully, Zach Ertz is going to be good to go. Obviously, you have a little bit of a loss when it comes to the skill position guys there. So you need as many guys as possible. If Zach Ertz is good to go, I think if they can run the football better than they did in the Thursday night game and utilize Jaden's legs better than they did in the Thursday night game. We are still at that point of the season where is his rib bad? Is his rib not bad? We know for sure right now his rib's fine. You know, his vision that he had in New Orleans was awesome. The vision that he had against Tennessee when running the football was awesome. Let's see a little bit of that. And let's utilize Jaden's legs in a maybe more of an RPO kind of function. No quarterback powers, please. None of those. Don't need any of those. But I think running the football and executing on offense is going to be crucial if they want to beat a team that's as talented as Philly.
Remember, they tried a couple of those design quarterback runs against Philadelphia, which is why, you know, when we had the discussion about the people that were convinced that he was hurt, I'm like, well, then that was complete and utter stupidity if they were running him into piles as an injured player. You know, you mentioned, you know, the Barkley thing. It depends on how they play him. You know, if they play him like they did the first game and they load the box, then you can't have him run against a loaded box. And they did a good job in the first half. But if you switch it up and decide, you know, we're not giving up. We'll give up between the 20s, but we're going to try to be, you know, really strong in the red zone. I don't think they'll play it that way, and they didn't the first time, and I don't think I would do it that way. But that's going to be so interesting, and it's going to be interesting to see how they play coverage behind the loaded box. The other thing, too, about Jaden's first game, and it's a really good point, it was his worst game by far. I give him a pass and gave him a pass because it was 4 days of prep after a draining game against Pittsburgh. The Eagles came in basically off of a bye against the Cowboys. Remember, they were resting their starters for much of the third and fourth quarters. And you had to face and prepare for this team and the best and one of the most creative and one of the most tricky in terms of confusing young quarterbacks, defensive coordinators in the game in Fangio. I remember after that game, I was critical of Cliff Kingsbury. I thought there should have been more quick stuff. I thought they should have stuck with the run a little bit more. I thought they looked confused. And, you know, one of the things Philly can do, and this is a luxury that few teams have, they can rush four and drop seven into coverage because the four they got rushing are really good. They can play four and seven in coverage on early downs because those four can stop the run. When I went back to that game and looked at it, some of the sacks, you know, and some of the big blowups weren't with extra man pressures. Philly's defense is really good right now, but we got a really good quarterback too, and we got an excellent receiver. I think Ertz is big in this game. If he can play, you got to have that veteran big target for the quarterback against this defense. All right, we'll hold off predictions, I guess, until the end of the show.
Yeah, we got to make the people wait for them.
I got my smell test next. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com.
Hey, y'all, it's Chip Patterson from the Cover 3 Podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. College football is about to enter its first ever 12-team playoff era, so join me, along with Tom Fornelli, Danny Cannell, and Bud Elliott, as we drop new episodes 5 times a week to close out the year. We've got reactions, bracket breakdowns, and best bets for these matchups with championship stakes. Follow and listen to the Cover 3 Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, a winning week this last week. I did throw Chicago in there as a clunker on Monday night. So 4-3, I'm now 11 units or plus 11 games on the year. 7 out of the last 8 weekends have been winning weekends, and the one that wasn't was 2-2-1. So it's really turned around over the last 2 months after a pretty wretched start this year. But in good shape to finish up the year here. We're going to get into the 4 college playoff games in a moment, but that's where we'll start tomorrow. There are 2 games that I absolutely love. Just from kind of a hunch, analysis, and then clearly from the sort of contrarian betting philosophy that I have. The 2 biggest public plays in the 4 playoff games are Clemson plus the points against Texas and Tennessee plus the points against Ohio State. There is a lot of SMU action too, and I do like Penn State a little bit, but they're not an official play. But I would definitely lean Penn State at home. We'll talk about this game in more detail, Denton and I will, but the first 2 plays are Texas minus 12. I'm seeing some 12.5s out there now. I told Denton this yesterday, or maybe before the show, that I played Texas yesterday minus 12 because I had a sense, and I was talking to somebody in warmer locales who said, this line's going up. It was 11 a few days ago. It was 12 yesterday. There's still some 12s out there, but I see some 12.5s now. That's just a lot of smart bettors betting Texas while the public money is on Clemson. Give me Texas, hook 'em horns, laying 12 in Austin against Clemson. We'll kind of talk about this game in more detail coming up. And then I really like Ohio State tomorrow night. I'm not a big fan of Tennessee's quarterback. It'll be cold. That place will be nuts. I think Ohio State feels it. Look, if they look a little skittish early, now 3 weeks after the Michigan game, and it's looking like Will Howard's going to basically, soil himself again on national TV in a big spot, I will raise my arms and say, sorry, but I think this is Ohio State with quick game, with getting the receivers the ball in space. They have great receivers, and, I see an Ohio State big win, so I'll take the Buckeyes laying the 7. Let's go to Sunday, and for the 4th time this year, I have the Washington game in the smell test. Now, the smell test historically with Washington or Washington's opponent involved, it was 64.5% coming into this season. It's 1-2 on the season this year, so not a good year with Washington games and smell test picks. But the public loves Philadelphia right now in a big way. I like Washington's chances Sunday. I do think there's some keys that I talked about, and I think Ertz playing, and I don't know that he will, would be a big plus, especially if he's really ready to go. But there's just way too much public money on Philly, one of the biggest public sides of the weekend. I'll take Washington at home plus the 3.5. Take the Jets. I think I've had them a couple of times recently, pushed against the Dolphins. I think week before that it lost. They're getting 3 at home against the Rams, who really need this game. Line is super short. Public just laying, the 3 like it's wrong. I'll take the Jets plus the 3. Sorry, but I'm going to give you the Bears again. This is really bad. How are they only getting 6.5 at home against Detroit? I know Detroit's banged up, but I'll buy the half point and take the Bears plus 7. The Panthers, here's Sheehan with all these bad teams. Yeah, but it's worked out more than it hasn't this year. The Panthers are getting 3.5 at home against the Cardinals. Gimme them. The Patriots are getting a big number, 14 at home on the road against Buffalo. After Buffalo's big win last week, a little bit of a letdown there. I'll take the Pats plus the 14. I'll take Seattle plus the 3 at home against Minnesota. Minnesota's a big play. And I really like the Cowboys on Sunday night. Tampa's a massive public side. So there you go. 2-1 Saturday and 1-2-3-4-5-6-7 on Sunday. 9 total plays. Texas minus 12, Ohio State minus 7. Sunday, Washington plus 3.5, the Jets plus 3.5, the Bears plus 7, the Panthers plus 3.5, the Patriots plus 14, Seattle plus 3, and Dallas plus 4. Especially late in the year, if you are playing my picks, and I know a lot of you don't, and that's fine, and a lot of you don't bet, that's smart. Follow me on X, on Twitter, at Kevin Sheehan DC, because in that hour window before 1 o'clock on Sundays and in that window before 12 o'clock tomorrow, I may scratch one of these plays depending on injuries, etc. So this time of year, especially when we get into the final 2 weeks of the NFL season, when you find out that teams are actually going to sit a lot of their starters because they've got nothing to play for, that changes things a lot. So you know, some of that starts to happen this weekend. So there you go. Let's get to our college football preview and picks.
Pick up your book bags. Grab your notebooks. It's time to go on campus with Denton.
Hey, give me my theme music.
All right, before we get to the games, Denton, can we? You want to just give our bracket? Fill out the bracket and who we have winning this whole thing?
Yeah, sure. We could definitely do that. My bracket has changed immensely over the last week just because of some of the news regarding a quarterback that plays at the University of Georgia.
Right. Carson Beck, it looks like he will not play in the quarterfinal game against the winner of the Indiana-Notre Dame game.
Right. And I would say it might be tough to expect him to play maybe again this season. Just because of the nature of the injury, it's an elbow, a big time elbow injury. All right, so what do you want to start with the?
Do you think just that, top to that if here? They if Georgia knew that in the moment after the SEC title game, they obviously weren't going to say anything because Florida State got dinged from the 4-team playoff. I don't think it would have kept them from the playoff.
It would have if they lost. They got an automatic.
Of course,
bid.
If they had lost, yes,
yeah, they got it. They got the automatic bid. So I've seen people arguing that on Twitter. It's mostly just butthurt FSU fans,
right?
Because they.
But Georgia got the automatic. Correct.
Yeah, they got the auto bid. If they would have lost, I do think it would have kept them out.
All right, let's fill out our brackets together. Let's start at the top of the bracket. Arizona State plays the winner of Clemson, Texas. Who do you have advancing?
I got Texas advancing in that one.
You know I do as well. Tennessee, Ohio State. I've got the Buckeyes moving on to play Oregon. Who do you have?
I have the Buckeyes in that one as well.
SMU, Penn State. The winner plays Boise in the Fiesta Bowl. Who do you have advancing?
I'm going to go SMU. I'm going to go upset here. I think this is the one upset that we see this weekend. I think SMU gets it done.
All right. That's our first switch. I've got Penn State. I kind of we'll get to these four games here in a moment. I think if they were playing in better conditions, SMU, tomorrow, I think I'd give them a real chance. But it's going to be frigid in Happy Valley. Indiana, Notre Dame. The winner plays Georgia. I've got Notre Dame moving on to play Georgia. Who do you have?
I have Notre Dame as well. I'm very cautious about this because Notre Dame has bitten me so often in the past in college football playoff and big bowl games. But I'm going to very reluctantly take Notre Dame to beat Indiana.
We both then in the Peach Bowl quarterfinal have Texas versus Arizona State. Who moves on?
First of all, that one being played at the Peach Bowl is hilarious.
Yeah.
I'm going to say Arizona State. I think Arizona State gets Texas. I think Texas is going to be riding in with some momentum, but the run with Cam Scataboo, he's been playing his ass off the final 3 weeks, 4 weeks of the season. So I'm going to go not upset in the rankings, but upsets in the mind of America. I'm going to go Arizona State.
What will Texas be favored by in that game?
I do think that depends how much or by how many they beat Clemson, but I would say comfortably at least 7.5, 8.5.
Yeah, I was going to say at least a touchdown, at least. I got Texas advancing to the semifinals. Ohio State, Oregon, who do you have?
Game of the year repeat with these two. I'm going to go Oregon. I'm going to go Oregon. I'm flipping Oregon. I'm looking at this similar to what we got dragged on by last year with Oregon and Washington. But Oregon's on the other side of this one. I'm going to go Oregon beating Ohio State at the Rose Bowl.
I'm going to do the same, and I wouldn't have before seeing Oregon play the way they played against Penn State in the Big Ten title game. It's concerning that Penn State moved the ball so effectively against them. But I'm going to go Oregon as well. So I've got an Oregon-Texas semifinal. You've got an Oregon-Arizona State Pac-12 semifinal. You've got SMU-Boise. I have Penn State-Boise. I've got Penn State advancing out of the Fiesta Bowl quarterfinal. Who do you have?
I have SMU advancing out of the Fiesta Bowl quarterfinal.
Wow.
I think they'll do a real good job stifling Ashton Gentry. I mean, look, Boise State is the 3 seed just based on the way that the bracket lined up, and you had to have a G5, and they've had a hell of a season. But I think SMU is a super talented team. I think their offense is a lot more explosive than more than just one player with Boise State. So I'm going to go SMU. I think it'll be a track meet, but I got the Mustangs.
I'll go Penn State in that because I've got Penn State Boise. I'll go Penn State advancing to that semifinal, beating Boise in the Fiesta. And then we both have Notre Dame, Georgia. Without Carson Beck, I'm going to go Notre Dame to the Orange Bowl semifinal to face Penn State.
I'm going to go Notre Dame, too. Oh, that feels... Oh, Jesus. I know that's not going to happen. I'm going to go Notre Dame. I think with Carson Beck, without Carson Beck, Georgia's offense is going to be tough. I thought Stockton came in and played well against Texas, but I thought that was more about Texas than it was about him. I'm going to go Notre Dame. Oh, my God. I feel like that's going to bite me in the rear end.
All right. So I have Texas-Oregon in the Cotton Bowl semifinal. You've got Arizona State-Oregon. Who advances to the final?
I think Oregon wins the Pac-12 championship at the Cotton Bowl.
I'm going to go Oregon there, too. God, man, it was just 2 weeks ago. I was like, I'm not a believer in Oregon. And it's not like I'm an overwhelming believer. This is wide open, man.
It's so
this
wide
thing
open.
Is wide open. I've got Notre Dame, Penn State in a semifinal. I have Notre Dame advancing to the final. You've got SMU Notre Dame. Who's in the final for you?
I have Notre Dame. We had the same final. We got Oregon and Notre Dame. We took different routes to get there, but we got there. Oh, my God. Just saying out loud in 2024 that Notre Dame, who can't throw the ball, is going to be in the national championship is insane, but such is life. Well, I got Notre Dame.
And then I'm going to really be insane
say
that Notre Dame's able to run the ball at will and beat Oregon in the championship game January 20th. Notre Dame over Oregon.
I'm going the other way. I'm going Oregon. I think Dylan Gabriel plays really well. I just don't know that Oregon, or I don't think Notre Dame is going to have a way to stop this Oregon offense. The biggest thing for me, Kevin, was watching the way they utilized Tez Johnson, Oregon, in that game against Penn State. I think Penn State's defense, despite what the score said in that, I think Penn State's defense is really good. I think Tom
it
Allen
has been.
Is a hell of a defensive coordinator.
But it wasn't against Minnesota. It wasn't against USC, and it wasn't against Oregon.
I think you look at those teams, maybe Minnesota withstanding, but USC and Oregon are built very similarly in the fact that they have some speed on the outside. I don't know that Notre Dame's going to be able to corral Oregon's speed on the outside.
All right, let's go through these four first-round games. This is, for me, as a college football fan, kind of a dream come true. For years, I've wanted something like this where the first-round games would be played at home sites. Tonight is Indiana, Notre Dame. We both have Notre Dame winning it, but give me how they win it and why.
I think they run the football. I think that's what it's going to come down to. You know, Indiana, when they go against teams that are far more talented than they are, while Notre Dame is not exactly the most talented team in college football, they are more talented than Indiana. Indiana is a year, 2 years ahead of schedule, although I guess in the new era of college football, there is no schedule because you can just kind of take players in and out at will. But I think the talent is going to be the biggest difference. And because the talent is such a big difference, Indiana has to play perfect. We saw that against Ohio State, that they made mistakes early and they were never able to recover from that. I think if they get down early and it forces them with Rourke to be one-dimensional on offense. He's a good quarterback. There's no doubt about that. But if you force him to be one-dimensional, that does not do Indiana's offense a whole lot of justice. I think Notre Dame wins this one. I think they win it by a touchdown. So I think they cover the 6.5 that number's at now.
I think Indiana's got a chance. I do. I think they've got a legitimate chance. Kirk Cignetti's team is explosive. They really, other than Michigan and Ohio State, they haven't really been stopped. I love how Notre Dame can run the football. I love the way they fight defensively. They're at home, cold as you know what, but Indiana's used to it too. I think they run their way to a kind of lower scoring game than maybe some would think. In this game, the total in this game is, what, 53? Something like that, 52? Hold on. 50 and a half right now, 51, somewhere around there. I don't love a side either way, but if you forced me to bet it, I'd probably take the points and look for, you know, something like, you know, college football low-scoring game is something like 24 to 20. But I think Notre Dame survives and advances tonight. Man, that'll be a scene. In South Bend, it's two teams from the same state that don't have, you know, the regular playing each other thing going on. What a season Indiana's had. To be honest with you, he's gotten a bit obnoxious for me, Cignetti. I'd like to see Notre Dame win this game. I think they're able to run the football. 24-20 Notre Dame.
Yeah, he has gotten a little bit over the top, but if they beat Notre Dame, I feel like that's justified. One of the reasons that Cignetti's been, to me, getting annoying is because they really haven't beaten a great team this year. Obviously, that changes with Notre Dame. I hope the snow is in full effect. I don't think it's going to be snowing
it's
by
not.
The time
it's just
we kick off,
yeah.
But it's going to be cold and you'll see some snow. It's going to feel like a great Big Ten game with a lot on the line. So I'm pumped for this one. Tickets to get in the door right now, Kevin, $450. That's awesome.
Because they've got the smallest of the four venues, too.
They got the small venue, and it's, you know, a couple of hours at this point, 7 hours prior to kickoff. Like, this is going to be a whole lot of fun. Breaking it down on SiriusXM after, by the way. I got shows tonight and tomorrow.
Denton hosts the best college football recap show on SiriusXM, so tune into that. All right, take us to 12 noon tomorrow.
All right, on TNT. Yeah, that's right. We're playing college football on TNT. TNT or HBO Max, if you want to stream that. You get SMU and Penn State. This one was designed, I think, to not match up with that Ravens-Steelers game, which makes a whole lot of sense. I believe Penn State is going to white out this game.
They are.
You got SMU, you got Penn State. Penn State's 8.5-point favorites. I've already told you, I like SMU in this one. Drew Aller's going to be playing, obviously, for Penn State. He's already said he's coming back next year, so maybe build some momentum to next year if you're Penn State. But I like SMU to maybe send or keep Penn State home, maybe a little unhappy.
Look, I'm not a big James Franklin fan, and I could see him, you know, somehow having this team not prepared. Now, they've been very good with him as a favorite, really good with him as a big favorite. Why I like Penn State, and I actually think Penn State's got a chance to cover, is what we saw in the Big Ten title game. Singleton and Catron Allen rushing the football right through Oregon's defense, and you can do that against SMU defensively. And I think on a cold, windy day, which is what it's going to be in Happy Valley, I see Penn State dominating the line of scrimmage, offense, defense, and really controlling the football. If you haven't seen Penn State, Tyler Warren's one of the best tight ends in recent memory. Brock Bowers was great. Tyler Warren's going to be the next really highly drafted great tight end in the NFL. He is so much fun to watch. I think it's a physical mismatch, Penn State and their running game against SMU's defense. But the other part of this, and I think I told you before the show or during one of the breaks, I like what Kevin Jennings, the SMU quarterback's done. I think they're creative offensively, and I think there's a chance they can move the ball and score points. However, it just looks like a team that is a fast-track, good-weather team. And wind howling temperatures in the low 20s, wind chills near, you know, single digits to zero. I see this dude, Kevin Jennings, struggling tomorrow. I just have this vision of him dropping back and overthrowing guys and underthrowing guys and taking big sacks. I like Penn State to win 27 to 14, something like that, not really be tested tomorrow. All right, where are we going next,
Austin? All right, we're going to that 4 o'clock kick. You just keep it tuned to TNT and Max. You're going to get that annoying notification from your television. Are you still watching after 4 hours of not changing the channel? The answer is yes.
Does that happen on HBO Max? Doesn't happen on TNT, obviously. Why wouldn't people just watch on TNT? Will the stream be a better picture?
If you don't have YouTube TV or something like that.
All right.
I think it does happen on Max, by the way. When you're 4 hours at the same thing, because very rarely do they stream sports. Anyway, you get Clemson, you get Texas. We've talked about this game. I like the under in this one at 50.5. And really what it comes down to, Kevin, I don't really trust either offense. Like, I don't trust Texas to blow out Clemson, but I don't trust Clemson to score a lot of points to make this hit the over. So I could see this being like a Texas wins by 10 and like a 20-10 kind of matchup, similar to what they've done this season against better football teams or just as good football teams, is Clemson. You know, Clemson, if that first half in the ACC championship wasn't as weird with mistakes from SMU, weird with officiating that went in favor of Clemson, they wouldn't be here. I like the under in this one. I think Texas wins. Hopefully you get a good game from Quinn Ewers. If not, you're going to really start to hear the loud calls for Arch Manning as you lead up to the second weekend of this thing.
I think this might be the last game at Texas for Quinn Ewers, and not because he's going to the NFL. Because if he decides to stay, it's not his team next year. It's Arch Manning's team.
No.
You disagree?
No, I agree with you that it's not going to be his team. I mean, he's going to end up in Michigan State. I've seen some rumors. Maybe he goes back to Ohio State. He's not going to be at Texas anymore.
Look, the key to this game is truly turnovers. Clemson's been winning the turnover battle. They got the turnovers from SMU in the first half. They need the turnovers. They're not a good offensive team. They need more possessions. Cade Klubnik, to me, is less than average. And I know he's had some big moments like the end of the Pitt game and, you know, the last drive that set up the long field goal in the ACC title game. I'm not impressed with them at all offensively. I just don't think they're a very good team. You know, that South Carolina game, they could have won. They could be on a 5-game winning streak right now. But with wins over really who? SMU in the title game, where they were hanging on by thread at the end. I think it's all about, you know, getting some takeaways with their defense. If they do that against Texas, it'll be close. But I see Texas at home rolling. I think they can run the football. I think that whether it's yours or Manning, they'll be effective offensively. You're right. I see a low-scoring game. I see unders across the board in all these games. And this one has it's like 51, 52. Hold on. Yeah, 52. So I'm going to go Texas. Now, I've been saying all week, It's 42 to 17. That would put it over. So I'll say 42 to I got 38 to 10.
Whoa.
Texas. This is a blowout. This is the most one-sided game of the day if the nightcap isn't. So let's get there quickly.
Yeah, the nightcap is the one that, I mean, Ohio State for the limit. They're at home against Tennessee. A lot of the public money is on Tennessee. I think the fact that this total is as low as it is speaks more to Tennessee than it does to Ohio State. I think a lot of people are they feel a certain way about Ohio State because of the way their season ended against Michigan. And I don't discredit anyone for feeling that way. Their offense looked brutal. What's really been hidden in the weeds, Kevin, to those that maybe aren't paying close enough attention, Ohio State's defense has been insane this year. I mean, they have been absolutely crippling the opposition. There's been one team that scored more than two touchdowns against them. That was Oregon. No one else has come really even close to doing so. I don't think Tennessee stands a chance in this one. I got Ohio State. I have them dominating the football game. I think this might be one where I'm just kind of prepping for my show in the third quarter because it's over.
Imagine the team that was scoring 60 and 70 early in the season, Tennessee, is actually now a better defensive football team than they are an offensive football team. And to your point, Ohio State's outstanding defensively. I guarantee you the average college fan didn't see that Tennessee, Ohio State would have the lowest total on the board, but it does at 45.5, 46. I like Ohio State. I think Tennessee's going to struggle to score. Ohio State can't miss field goals and turn the ball over in the red zone like they did against Michigan, and I don't think they will. I see something, you know, like 28-10, 28-13, something like that, but Ohio State advancing. All right, we'll come back. We'll finish up with our Washington Eagles predictions. That's next. All right, Sunday, prediction time. I think Washington wins. I'm picking Washington to beat Philadelphia Sunday, 27-17. I went back and watched a little of the Carolina game. How did they hang in there? Actually, it was a lot of Bryce Young. He actually played really well and made a bunch of plays. But one of the keys in that game is they stayed on the field. They were 7 of 16 on third down, 3 of 5 on fourth downs. Washington may have to, you know, roll the dice on some fourth downs. You know, fourth and twos, fourth and threes. Definitely in plus territory. I have a feeling that they're going to play well Sunday. I don't love the matchup if they're unhealthy at tight end as much as I do if Ertz plays, and I know that's a big risk because there's probably a lean that he doesn't play Sunday. Philly has at times been in games that you didn't expect them to be in. Jacksonville, Carolina, Cleveland. That's going back a ways. Understood. Washington has their best outing of the year. They beat Philadelphia at home Sunday, 27-17. Denton.
I wish I shared that confidence. I hope what you just said comes to fruition. I do not think that it does. I think the game will be much higher scoring than the first matchup between these two teams. I think Washington will have a lot more success against Philadelphia's defense than they did on that Thursday night game with only a couple days to prepare. But I do think Philadelphia is going to get this one. I'm going to go 30-24 that Philadelphia wins this one and Washington drops to 9-6.
Enjoy it. Enjoy one of the best football television weekends I can ever remember. Starts tonight with Indiana Notre Dame. Back on Monday, Chris is up next.